Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Kyle Summersall, and Kyle is a meditation teacher. He is an entrepreneur, and in this conversation, we talked about healing and growth and meditation and inner work and shadow work. And Kyle is somebody who has really, to me, spent a lot of time with himself. And because of that, he is able to give an incredible amount of wisdom. And so Kyle's only 30 years old, but it's like he is so wise and such an incredible human being. And so I'm really grateful that we got to do our first sit-down episode of the Danny Miranda Podcast, the first live episode recorded. It was yesterday. Now you're listening to it today. So if you notice a little bit of a different style or a different vibe, I'd love to know your thoughts about this episode of the Danny Miranda Podcast. I'm so grateful for your listening, and so would love your thoughts as always. So without further ado, this is Kyle Summersall.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Okay, sure. We're good on here too. Beautiful, Kyle, beautiful. Welcome to the podcast, my friend. The first ever in-person podcast.
Amazing. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to be here with you. So grateful for the experience.
Yeah, 100%.
I think a good place to start might be how we first met.
Yeah. That was really special. We met at, it was a breathwork event. My friend, he works for the company. He invited me there. And I don't know, for some reason, the days leading up to it, I was like, this is something that I want to go to. It felt like it was something special. And I remember they sent an email and they were like, the door's closed, we aren't letting you in late. And so I was going with my girlfriend and I was like, all right, be on time. Like, we got to get there. I don't want to be there. I don't know. I remember being in our group and there was definitely a vibe. You know, I can tell that we vibed. And so I was already planning on talking to you after the event. And then we both were on our way to the bathroom and you were like, yeah, we should definitely connect. And I was like, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah, what I actually said was your energy seemed pure. Yeah. Just from the one interaction we had.
For sure.
And the reason why I said that was because it seemed like you were coming from such a genuine and self-aware place.
Thank you.
And it seems like from talking to you afterwards, and that whole journey started something like 8 years ago, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe my whole life, but being intentional about it like 8 years ago, I was drawn to meditation just from different influences around me. A close friend mentioned Buddhism when I was in college. After graduating, saw a lot of people I admired, you know, Kobe, Oprah, Phil Jackson, you know, Steve Jobs were big advocates for it. And Steve Jobs, his biography, that was a big part of it because I remember him mentioning, you know, that without acid and meditation, there wouldn't be Apple, you know? And I was like, okay, those are two things that I definitely need to try, but we'll start with the meditation piece, you know? And just seeing the poise that some of those people I mentioned, seeing the poise they have, and, you know, knowing that Phil Jackson also brought meditation in with the Bulls and understanding so much more how our mental state, you know, plays such a big impact on us. I was like, all right, these are things worth trying. And I read the book, The Power of Habit. And at that point, I was teaching third grade. And they were like, this is something that will help you in your classroom. And I was like, forget the kids. This is something that will help me with my life, you know? And we read like the first chapter. He's like, almost everything you do is a habit. And I was like, whoa, like, I didn't know that. You know, that seems really important. And yeah, so decided to make meditation a habit, and I started with just reading online, and I remember someone was like, just start with 2 minutes a day. And through my awareness of like habit science, I was like, oh, even if I don't do 2 minutes, if I say like, oh, I'm going to do 10 conscious breaths on the days I don't want to do it, or I'm just going to do it on this train stop. I was aware that just consistently practicing it would make it so that the habit would become stronger and eventually it'll be automatic. And so that was the start. And then I thought I knew things and realized I didn't know much as I kept going on. And in that process, I started journaling. I was always exercising, but journaling was another wellness practice that's been really helpful for me. So I had a community before, and I remember we had an event, and I had in my mind, I was like, 75 people are going to come here. And we had like 62 people show up. And I spent literally almost the whole event like being annoyed.
Wow.
You know, because we didn't meet our goal. And after, I was talking to a friend that was there, and she was like, that was such a great event. And it dawned on me that, wow, like, I didn't appreciate that at all, you know. And so after that, I started a daily gratitude practice that's been really powerful for me, just journaling each day. So I'd say that combination, and then more recently, it's been a lot of shadow work. So just connecting dots from childhood, looking at different patterns, what's influenced me, is just like being my own therapist in a way. And so that's been super, super powerful as well.
Yeah. Well, there's so much there I want to dive into.
yeah, for sure.
You just condensed 8 years into like into a minute or two. But what's the shadow work all about?
Yeah, so the shadow is basically a psychological term that references the part of ourselves that we were discouraged from showing as a kid. And so it basically gets repressed or suppressed into the unconscious mind, but it still really influences our behavior and our thoughts. So for example, maybe if you were bullied, or maybe if your teacher called you out on things, or maybe if your parents called you out on things, or maybe if society called you out on things, you know? And so I know personally there was a lot I had to do around like my relationship to masculinity and what it meant to be a man, because observing what, you know, I learned from my dad, from society, and just the things he explicitly told me, like boys don't cry or things like that, you know? I had to, just connect, look at a lot of my behaviors, and even looking at like the way I communicated with people. In my home, we weren't big on sharing emotions, talking about emotions. And personally, like, I never really felt comfortable sharing my emotions with others, or felt like I could depend on anyone to like see me in that way or hold those emotions. And so a lot of the time I got into relationships where, or friendships where, I was the helper. You know, I was the person that was able to listen to the other person and support them in that way, but I didn't feel comfortable sharing myself. And I often got into friendships where they didn't necessarily have the capacity for that. And it was helpful for me too, because I was comfortable with that. You know, that's what I was used to. And that's how I felt like I could receive love, because I was used to compromising with, you know, with my folks at home to receive love and just worrying about how they felt. And so it's a lot of stuff like that, that, you know, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old me is like, okay, this is what I need to feel safe. And we carry that into adulthood. And then it's not until you, oftentimes it happens in therapy or if you have a close friend or something, but you know, there's this four big questions that can help you to look at your shadow, or four big themes. So one is like judgments. What do you judge about other people? That oftentimes signals a part of yourself that like you haven't fully accepted or you feel self-conscious about. Another thing is, what are things about yourself that you fear or that you judge? And that's more directly, you know, or that you, yeah, don't feel good about. You know, maybe those are parts of you that were discouraged as a kid. And then two other things that help. One is, I'm blanking on the other two. It'll come to me right now.
So the first two are judge and fear.
Yeah, judgment and fear. And then the other one is, I'm blanking on the other two.
It's all good.
They'll come to me. But basically, the shadow is, these are questions that like I would journal about. And along with journaling, it's also just like listening to your body, right? So like, oh, that's, there you go. That's another one. What are your triggers, right? So what triggers you emotionally? And so I started to become aware, like, if I feel something heavy in my chest or on my heart, you know, that's my body communicating with me that there's something more, you know, and just investigating that and releasing it, you know, through shaking, through crying energetically, but also accepting it, processing it, shedding light on it, does wonders. Because then you can integrate parts of you that you may have felt shame around before, or you might not have accepted, but were still running your life, you know?
And so how do you consciously feel different after doing it? Or is it still something you're working through and a process you're still working through?
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, with healing is it's, you know, it's never done.
Right.
You know, but I like the paradox that we're whole and perfect but not finished, you know, but still healing. Right. So we're still infinite beings, and I think that's important to remember so that you don't fixate on healing, have your whole identity being like, I need to be better, I need to be better, you know? But to answer your question, the body holds so much wisdom, you know, and the body is really what stores the trauma. And so when we're able to, you know, that's an interesting thing too, you know, because you might think, oh, like, I'm safe in this situation, I'm not that little kid anymore. But if your body doesn't feel safe, it'll still trigger those stress responses until you give it attention and you release it, which is often through like feeling that pain and maybe crying or shaking or coughing or, you know, yeah, whatever the body does to move, you know, and release the tension. But the interesting thing is once you release the energy and process it, then you don't get triggered the same way around those types of situations. You're able to give yourself more compassion in those situations. So your whole, you know, you don't forget it, but you may even be more aware of it, but your relationship to it changes, you know? So maybe it's something where, like, you know, you got rejected by someone you had a crush on, and then, like, the fight or flight system activated and you just froze and you have that stuck trauma. So now you have a really hard time, you know, putting yourself out there with people, and you might not have any idea of why it's so hard for you to put yourself out there. And then you give awareness to that and you're like, oh, you feel that moment. Instead of neglecting it, you feel, you know, that scenario, and then you can move forward. And now you're like, oh, I got rejected that one time, but now I don't get as triggered and I can put myself out there, something like that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I was with someone last night, I won't say who, but she's over, let's say, 50 years old, mm-hmm. and she was thinking about a situation where she was six and she moved away from a place of her friends or family,
yeah.
and she said, I moved away, and she directly after was like, oh, like, she was still feeling the pain,
yeah.
of being six in that moment, and it wasn't even,
yeah.
something that, and so my question to you is, like, what do you do if, like, there are parts of all of us,
yeah.
I guess, whether we've acknowledged it or not, that is six and feels hurt?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what do you do other than asking the questions? Like, what would you recommend for somebody who's open to
it? Yeah. So, I mean, so a big part of it is, one, just listening to the body and bringing awareness to those, you know, things that are even coming up, you know, because the mind replays what the body wants to heal. So
the mind replays what the body wants to heal.
Yeah. Or what the heart wants to heal. Or we can say body. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think that's something we overlook because we're taught in school to really prioritize our brain, you know, we overlook the body's wisdom. And, you know, like, we can, like, a finger can, you know, be almost falling off and then it peels back together. It's like the body is so smart, you know, but we don't give it that credit. And so a big thing I would say is that knowing, you know, just like orgasming, like, you don't have to, the more you think about trying to orgasm, the worse you are at it. You know, the body already knows how to do that, you know? So it's trusting the body's wisdom and just setting up that circumstance, you know? So bringing awareness to it. A big thing is then accepting that that's how you feel, allowing yourself to feel those feelings and letting the body do whatever it needs to do in that moment. Maybe it's shake, maybe it's cough, you know, maybe it's cry, but just letting it do that, right? And then, you know, as you feel and release those things, whether it's through journaling, whether it's through talking to someone, whether it's just feeling it in the body, on the other side, inevitably, there's wisdom, you know? On the other side of heartbreak, on the other side of pain, there's always wisdom. And so life is painful by its very nature, you know, and not because we're doing it wrong. So just accepting that is a big part of it. And then, you know, if you want more professional help, that's what therapists, that's their job, you know? And so that is something that, you know, they can really be helpful for. But personally, in my journey, it's been a lot of, you know, journaling, feeling, and just talking to friends that I know can receive what I'm sharing with empathy.
Yeah. And how do you, was this like a conscious decision that you made? I'm going to start doing shadow work, or was it something that you just came into?
Yeah. So, it's such a good question, because for so long I didn't know really how to feel. I knew how to feel, but I wouldn't really allow myself to feel because I had internalized, you know, all these things about masculinity, you know, and so it was, summer 2020. One of my really close friends, he's like my little brother, and he was like, "Do you ever notice that we usually talk about me?" He was referring to himself. He was like, "I would love to like hear more about you." I was taken aback because I was like, whoa. And I started thinking, I was like, wait, you're right. You know, we really only talk about you. But that was so comfortable for me because that was what I'd learned at home. And those were, you know, the majority of my relationships. And it was even a little weird for me because I was like, wow, he's asking me to show more of myself. And so that was the beginning of the process. And he had a lot of experience with therapy. So he, you know, was aware of how helpful just having someone to open up to can be. So that was a big part of it. And I started, you know, sharing more. And then when George Floyd got murdered, like that just like cracked my heart wide open, you know? And I had so many things that I had to process from childhood and then I started realizing, like, oh, I remember moments where, like, I felt things on my heart and I wouldn't let myself cry. And then my relationship to crying was already changing. But I remember there was also, like, Father's Day, and, like, I wanted to connect with my dad in a way, and I felt like I couldn't. There was just a lot of things on my heart. And there was this album that this band from London put out, Salt, S-A-U-L-T, and there are some songs on there that I just felt so hard that I was able to cry with the songs.
Wow.
And I remember after crying, I was like, wow, I feel so much lighter. And then I would get all this wisdom coming to me. And yeah. And then, you know, I was already dating my girlfriend, but, you know, in a, like a conscious relationship like ours, like the shadow, like it's gotta go. All the secrets gotta come up. All the insecurities gotta come up, you know? So there was a lot of healing that I had to do around intimacy. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that I was feeling for the first, you know, that I was allowing myself to feel. And in that process, I would notice every time how after I allowed myself to feel or share or cry or whatever I needed to do, there would just be wisdom that came to me. You know, I'd be like, oh, this memory from when I was this age, and like, oh, wow, I forgive myself, or, oh, I forgive my mom in this moment. And just things just come into me, you know what I mean? Just these downloads. And then I started connecting that dot, like, oh, my body feel, like when my body is triggering a feeling, listen to it, you know, for so long I ignored it. And so now I'm more aware where it's like, if I feel something, I just like, okay, what are you trying to tell me feeling? You know, what's going on? You know, and then I can process it a lot better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned something before, how your girlfriend, you have a conscious relationship.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So essentially it means that we both are intentional about our healing. We both are intentional about looking at, you know, those childhood. Oh, that's the fourth thing from the shadow work was projections. Wow. But yeah, you know, and so that's another thing that can make you aware of things that different traumas you have are your projections, you know. And so, you know, my girlfriend and I try to bring a lot of awareness to, like, when we are projecting things, when we are feeling triggered, when we are, you know, feeling unaligned, when we don't feel like communicating. That's a big thing for both of us, you know. In both of our households, we never really felt heard. And so we had a lot to grow in our communication, you know, and we've gotten a lot better, you know, still ways to go, but just, yeah, growing our awareness and growing individually and being aware that neither of us are going to complete each other. We have to do the work internally, and through that we can come together and multiply, you know, create something beautiful for the world. And so that's really what I mean by conscious relationship.
Yeah. And so it's crazy because most people don't talk like that, right?
For sure, it's
very rare to hear, oh, you know, we're here for each other, for the other person's growth.
Yeah.
So for somebody who hears that and wants to be in a relationship with somebody like that,
yeah,
what would you say to that person? How do you find somebody who is also trying to heal?
Yeah. I'd say it starts with you. You know, so prioritizing your own healing, prioritizing your own joy, figuring out what you value, you know, figuring out what makes you feel most alive. And, you know, there's a lot of different practices that I have done to help me with all those questions, because those are big questions, you know, and it's never finished. But in the moment, when you, sometimes you just need to ask the question, even if the answer doesn't come right away, you know? And so just prioritizing all those things for myself. And then I'd say, get very clear about the type of person you want, because they exist. They're already out there, you know? And so it's interesting. That was something both of us did, is she did a little more than I did, but we both like visualized the type of person that we wanted. She wrote it down, and it's funny because she showed me all these journals of like her describing a type of person that's like just like me.
Whoa.
Which is so cool. But I'd say, yeah, you know, focusing on your own healing yourself, and then getting clear on what you want, the type of person you want, and then considering, how do I have to show up, you know, to attract that type of person. And yeah, you know, I feel like once you have that intention, if they have that intention, which they will, if they're that type of person, you two will attract each other.
What's been your visualization process? Have you taken anything from her, and have you used that, if at all? And what is her process like?
Yeah, so,
because it works clearly, right?
Yeah, well, she was just really big into like law of attraction, and yeah, she looked at some, I'm blanking on, there's a YouTube video of someone that she looked at, but basically she thought about, you know, the type of person that she would want, and she just wrote it down, and she wrote it down in the present tense, mm-hmm. as if she already, that was already her present reality. Mm-hmm. And she just left it, you know? And the funny thing is, like, I had a lot of healing to do personally. And then there was a certain point on the summer right before we met where I was like, okay, I'm ready to meet my person.
Wow.
And I felt it in my body. You know, I knew I was ready. And I went on Hinge and we met a week later.
Wow.
But she was waiting for like a year because I still had to get my shit together, you know?
Yeah. And so what if you're not ready? Like, when did you start healing, would you say?
Yeah. Well, I started intentionally healing the summer of 2020 because I would hear people talk about healing before and I had no idea like how to do that or what they were really talking about, you know? So I feel like a lot of the work I was doing before was growth oriented mm-hmm. and awareness oriented, which is still really powerful. But I wasn't doing as much connecting dots from childhood, looking at past traumas. I didn't start being intentional about that until 2020. And I wanted to answer your visualization question too, because that's something that's really big for me that I do now with basically anything that I want in my life. There's one practice that I've been practicing every morning, but it's I draw a letter. You don't have to draw the letter, but this is what I do. I draw a letter. I got it from Joe Dispenza, and then I write. The letter basically represents my intention, and then I draw like an electromagnetic field around it to like represent the infinite possibilities, you know, that are available. And then I get clear on my intention. So whatever it is, whether it's like a company I want to build, a person I want to attract, a vacation I want, whatever it is. But generally, it's helpful to just focus on one main thing at a time. So I write in detail what that is, and I write it in the present tense. So I say, I am this, I, whatever it is. And then I write down the associated feelings that I'll have once I attract it. Then I have like a little chakra meditation I do, basically just to align the different energy centers. So I just, where attention goes, energy flows. So I just give attention to those different energy centers in my body. And after each time I do it, then I give attention to the space around me, just like the infinite space around me. And at the end, I give, you know, I have a breath where I give attention to the infinite space around me. And then I just allow myself to basically just imagine, you know, that reality. So I'm in that present moment of whatever it is that I wanted. And I can feel it. I can sense it. I can taste it. And then I let it go. And I just practice gratitude, live in gratitude, and I just walk towards it, you know, and live in gratitude. But I do it daily because basically what you're doing in that is you are aligning the subconscious mind, right? Because 95%, you know, science is showing 95% of our decisions, of our thoughts are unconscious. So we repeat most of the same thoughts every single day. You know, we repeat most of the same decisions, behaviors every single day. And so when you do that, the unconscious mind is a two-way street. So generally, it's giving our conscious mind, you know, things and thoughts. But we can also intentionally give it what we want, you know, it to align with. And so through that practice, you can move from like feeling like, oh, this is impossible, to like, oh, no, this is really possible. And because your subconscious then starts auto suggesting things that are helpful for you, you know, or when you have a thought, it'll be like, yeah, I back that up. That can happen. That's real, you know. And then, of course, that impacts your emotions, your behavior. And then, before you know it, you're in that reality. You know? And the thing is, I think what's important to remember is that like, we're manifesting every single day, regardless of if we know it. You know, if you want to make yourself a cup of coffee, you got to think, I'm going to make myself a cup of coffee, and then you go do it. You know, and that's, if you want to make a bridge, you want to write a book, it's our thoughts are that powerful.
So could you give us an example of how you've used that practice and actually created something in real life?
Yeah. I mean, one, definitely, my girlfriend, I didn't do the drawing, but I definitely like visualized that. My first company, I wasn't totally aware that I was manifesting, you know, but it was such a burning desire that I was dreaming about it. I was thinking about it every day, you know. So I'd be like, all right, we're gonna get 100 people at this next event, you know. And then like 2 months later, we'd have 100 people at the event. And like, there's so many things had to happen for that to happen, you know, or I'd be like, yeah, I remember, you know, we were having these larger social events and then more intimate classes, and the classes started in my apartment, and I was like, okay, we got to get out of my apartment. And I was also like, we need to grow the team. The next week, I met the kid who was my little brother. I met him playing ball that next week. A week and a half later, I met another girl who joined the team. She eventually introduced us to our first space, and we partnered with this coffee shop to have our weekly meditations. And it was just like me just having those thoughts and visualizing it, and it would just happen, you know, or I would see the opportunities. And I was like, okay, we need to have like partnerships, you know, and really start fitting into companies' marketing budgets. You know, a couple of weeks later, my boy's like, yo, there's this new Lululemon spot. You'd be perfect for them. And then we created a partnership with them, you know, had another person that was like, hey, my friend from WeWork, you know, they want to have more events like this. And we had a developed partnership with them. And it was like, yeah, it was just like, oh my gosh. You know, and I remember the reading The Alchemist and him be like, when you have a burning desire, the whole universe, you know, works together to like help that come to reality. And I was like, okay, whatever. But now what I realize is that like everything is just energy, you know? So if you can align with that energetic reality, and if you believe it, then anything resonating at that vibration, you know, you can attract that, you know, and depending on the distance or depending on the grandness of it, it might take more time. But, you know, literally what you are seeking is seeking you. Like if you are someone who's looking to, for example, if you're someone who's looking to build a, I don't know, a team, like something for artists, you know, or if for podcasting, right? If you're looking to build a program for artists, for podcasters, there are a ton of people that want to get better at podcasting that are looking for a program for podcasting, you know? And so if you are aware of that and putting that energy out, those people are going to come to you as well, you know? And so just thinking more about things as energy definitely helps me with that. And just remembering that like anything I want, it already exists, you know, that mansion, that car, that business, like those people you want to be in your community, your consumers, it all already exists, you know?
So the visualization for Joe Dispenza, that is what, like a 10-minute thing, a 30-minute thing? You sit down, is it audio? Like, break that down.
Yeah. Good question. So, I mean, what I do, I usually do it after my regular meditation, but it can be done, you know, and part of this is also like, elements of this are in Think and Grow Rich too, for anyone who's read that book. There's a chapter. By Napoleon Hill. There's a chapter on visualizing and writing your things down. So, the only difference really between Joe Dispenza's and Think and Grow Rich is that in Joe Dispenza's, he has you do a little like meditation as well, which I think is powerful for settling the body. But, you know, it couldn't be as quick as 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know. I usually do it for 25 minutes. I pick 25 just because I do the Pomodoro method during the day, so my watch just has a 25-minute timer, so I'm just like, all right, that seems like a good amount of time. But basically, you know, to make it super, super simple, once you've written down your intention, you just reread it. And I like to reread it out loud so you can really feel it, hear it. You can say it under your breath if you got a ton of people around that you don't need to be sharing all your dreams with. And, you know, so once you've drawn the picture or written whatever the intention is and the associated emotions, you can just read that, you know. So that takes, you know, a few seconds to reread. And the important thing is when you read it, you have to feel it, because the subconscious only adopts thoughts that it feels. You know, that the body feels. So if you're saying, well, I'm gonna be a millionaire, but your body is like, no, you're not, you know, then it's not gonna work, you know. So what can be helpful is figuring out ways to you know, have an intention that you can allow yourself to believe. So yeah, that takes less than a minute to read it. And then if you want to do a quick body scan, you know, you can do that in 30 seconds. So you can basically be laying down or sitting down and just go through the different parts of your body, bringing attention there, right? So you start basically at the bottom of the spine, and then you go up to the sacral region, which is like right below the belly button. Then you go to your solar plex, and these are some of the main energy centers in the body. Then you go to your heart. So you basically bring attention there, and then you have it on your next breath. After you bring attention to that body part, you just bring attention back to your breath and the space around you. You can bring attention to your throat. It's another main energy center. Then you bring attention to the third eye, the point right between your eyebrows. Then you bring attention to the top of your head. And then you, on your next breath, bring attention to just the space around you. And then you can allow, you set a timer for, I don't know, 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, however comfortable you are sitting, and then visualizing. And it's really powerful to do this right as soon as you wake up and right before bed, because that's when your subconscious mind is in a state where it's very receptive. You know, that really groggy state, it's usually really receptive to you know, anything that you feed it. So that also is a, you know, really important if you, the first thing you do is like look at social media, because that can really, you know, mess you up, or looking at the news. And so that can be done. It can be done in 10 minutes, 5 minutes, however much time you have. But what you'll notice is if you do it twice a day, I'd recommend, you know, right at the end of the day and right if you wake up, what you'll notice is that you'll just be daydreaming throughout your day and visualizing, oh, you know, this reality, that reality. And so you'll be, and in the middle of the night, you'll notice you'll just be dreaming about things, you know, that align with it. And so you'll end up doing it more. But I'd say try to be intentional at least twice a day for at least 5 minutes.
Mm. Wow, that's definitely something I'm going to check out and,
for sure, yeah,
and think about doing myself. And so you mentioned a business back then that mm-hmm. you were visualizing. What was that business about? And I know you got a current venture, and take us through those.
Yeah, so the first one, it was called Inner Glow. And the idea behind it, you know, I was looking around and I was 3 years out of college. So a lot of friends going through transitions. The election was happening, 2016. It was just felt like there was a lot of suffering, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. And I had been meditating up for 3 years at that point. And one thing my meditation practice helped me understand is that, you know, we have so much to offer, you know, already, you know, just from being human, you know. And the difference that I saw in our society was that, like, you know, a lot, what I saw was that, you know, our titles and so many external things were what we looked to for validation. And I was like, wow, I was even thinking about getting a PhD. And I was like, wow, like, you know, so often we feel like we need this ring or this house or this title or this car to be enough. And, you know, even looking at hip hop culture, like that's like the whole thing, you know. But I was, you know, feeling through my meditation, I was like, wow, we're these like powerful beings, you know, that have so much ability. And we are not really connected to what's on the inside, to the infiniteness that's on the inside. And so that was the idea. It was called Inner Glow. And I remember saying, like, it started off with me just writing stuff. I was writing a blog and I was like, this is going to be a community. I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea how to turn it into a community. You know, but just with that intention, things unfolded, and it became, you know, if anyone's familiar with So Far Sounds, it became like the So Far Sounds for meditation. So basically we had larger social events, where we would partner with businesses like Lululemon and WeWork and like fit into their marketing budget and be able to, you know, have these social events where people could connect deeper with themselves and others. So we'd have group meditations, we'd have speakers and musicians. And I think the thing that really stood out is we'd have these small group conversations where people would just be able to connect on things that we don't normally talk about, you know, money, sex, fears, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd have those once a month, and then we'd have more intimate meditation classes. We'd have those weekly. And then, you know, that was a lot of the community stuff. I also did, like, we had, like, I was doing, honestly, too much, but we had arms as well. We had, like, a corporate arm and an education arm. So we would, like, partner with Whitney Museum. We partnered with Wharton Music, and we just bring mindfulness and these connection exercises to spaces like that as well. So that was Inner Glow. And it's funny, it's like, I had made some mistakes with the team, and I was just burning myself out. And it was funny because right when we were with Lululemon, and I told them, I was like, hey, I think I'm going to take a break. And they were like, oh man, we were just about to ask you to like come to our Chicago location. We want to like help you expand this thing. And that was me being like, oh fuck, like the universe really had my back, you know, but I was just thinking that I needed to be in control of the whole thing. And so that's sort of a shift with what I'm building now. It's called the Peoples, and
the Peoples.
Yeah. And it's sort of a full circle moment from Inner Glow. And the idea behind it, you know, we have this creator economy that's here, that's only growing. And the purpose is really to liberate creators, you know, through helping them connect more with themselves, through community, through helping them, you know, with the systems, the habits, the mental and wellness practices that help them to, you know, get out of their own way, take care of themselves, follow through with what they want to do. And then also there'll be an element of, you know, helping them to be able to monetize their craft so they can really, you know, not just put the work out and, you know, do that, but also make a living, you know. And so that's the big intention behind it. And you know, it's like a full circle moment for me because I've grown so much in the process. And the big difference is that I now have acknowledged that I'm not in control, you know, and I can have my intentions, have my plans, visualize. Well, I think, to take a step back, there's two big things that I'm now aware of. One, I'm so much more aware of my power as a manifester and the energetic nature of this reality. And two, I'm so much more aware that I'm not in control. And so, you know, that moment, you know, that I think it needed to happen the way it did. But now I set the intention and I allow it to happen. I allow myself to attract it. And I allow it to look like whatever it can look like, you know. I don't feel, you know, because I think what we have been taught, you know, as kids, we're aware that we're not in control. You know, we just gravitate towards our curiosities and we let ourselves be guided. But in our society, the adult thing to do is to you know, feel like you have everything under control and you're controlling it. But our mind and what we're controlling, it's based on our previous conditioning, you know, it's based on what we've been taught is possible, you know. And so if you only rely on that, then you're limited, you know. Obviously we need our mind and critical thinking, but if you also integrate the heart and the gut, and you know, I think some sort of faith practice can be powerful. Even if you don't believe in God, if you just, you know, believe that, okay, there's a source or an energetic reality that's like I'm a part of, but is bigger than me, you know, that has done so much for me because now I'm able to just trust, you know. And when you're, you know, vibrating at a level of trust and abundance and gratitude, you attract so much to you versus being like, oh my gosh, if this thing doesn't work out by tomorrow, it's over, you know. Then you're just limiting yourself, you know, because you don't really know the plan, you know.
Yeah. Did you read a lot of spiritual books as a child?
No. What did I read? I read Goosebumps. No, I do read a lot now, though. And it's interesting, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I've certainly read a lot, but, like, a lot of this stuff we already know. We just have to remember. And as we connect more with ourselves, we get these downloads because we're connected to the whole thing, you know? And so that's the thing, is like we can intellectualize stuff. I remember I read some stuff in The Alchemist and he was like, you know, everything works out, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, sure, whatever, you know. But it's not until I felt that, till I got those downloads, till I realized, I mean, I think, you know, as far as the surrender part, the big thing was like, I don't know if you read David Deida, Way of the Superior Man.
I have it.
Incredible book. But he basically shares that, like, you know, for so many of us, especially men, during sex, we're in our head, you know? And like, if you're in your head, then yeah, the experience is not the same. But if you can completely let go and connect to your heart, because your body already knows how to do sex, you know, it's like, we don't need to try to control that. You know, if you can completely let go, connect to your heart, connect to your partner, you can access the divine, you know, you can access oneness, you can access God, like, through sex, you know? And I was like, all right, sure, but we'll see, you know? But like, I really felt that, you know? And then I was like, whoa, like, what if I let go in the same way and just brought awareness to the abundance of the present moment, you know, in my day-to-day life? Was aware that in each moment, it wasn't a linear thing. Each moment is abundant. You know, there's so many possibilities. What if I opened up to that in my day-to-day life? And I started doing that, and not only did I feel better and I was less stressed, I was able to realize, like, oh, a lot of these, you know, anxieties or doubts or limitations that, you know, or sabotaging behaviors that I've adopted to feel safe throughout my life, those don't need to be my reality anymore. You know, there's actually, like, someone could walk through the door and give us $1 million right now. Like, that's a real possibility, you know what I mean? But, like, we don't always entertain thoughts like that, you know? And I was like, fuck, anything is really, really possible, you know, through surrendering, you know? And, you know, that changed my relationship to the word God and all that. But, yeah, through that process, I realized that I don't need to be in control. Because at first it was scary to not be in control, but then I realized I was never in control anyway. So
you didn't give yourself your heart or your mind or, you know, or this moment so much.
Or my curiosities or my passions, you know? Like,
there's so much that we take credit for that we didn't even do ourselves. And so it's like, how much of it is in our control or not? And that's, honestly, that's the scary part to me about surrender, where it's like you're almost, to you, does it feel like you're giving up power over controlling your own actions? Free will, right? Like, you're surrendering. Do you have free will?
Yeah. Yeah, so at first it was scary to me because I had operated on the idea that I had to control everything to be safe. And now it feels empowering because there's a level of trust, like, oh, this is going to work out. And I can trust that. So I can move like it's going to work out versus moving like it's not, which totally, you know, my emotions and my behavior is different. I show up more empowered because I'm like, I got it. You know what I mean? You know, and I'm not like religious, but now I connect with God, and I even say, like, God got me. You know what I mean? It's going to work out. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so to answer your question about free will.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You don't have to have an answer.
No. You know, like, that, I've thought about it. That's a big topic. Personally, I feel like I am being guided, you know? So I feel like there are things, there's a purpose on my heart right now, you know? I feel like I get downloads, you know, about, I might have an intention, but I don't necessarily know how it's going to happen, you know? And so what I realize is that I just need to control the what, and I just need to connect with why. And I can let go of the how and the when and allow myself to be guided on the how and when, right? So, you know, I have something on my heart. I'm like, okay, what is it? Okay, let's formulate this. Let's clarify the intention. Let's listen to this desire. Let's connect with why is this important to me? And then I can say, okay, this is the direction I'm moving. This is the energy I'm putting out. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. Because it's on my heart for a reason, you know? So as long as I move with that feeling that it's done, you know, then it comes to me.
Yeah. What I'm curious about with manifestation is, like, let's say that every player in the NBA implements these techniques, right? Yeah. Like, literally everyone, every single player religiously practice, I'm going to win the NBA finals this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, 31 teams of those people are going to be incorrect. So how do we think about that?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. And you know, so I that's a really good point, right? But I feel like it's much more about the energy and less about the matter, right? And we aren't necessarily aware of the timeline, right?
Yeah.
So perhaps it's like, you know, I am going to win an NBA championship. Maybe it might not be this year, you know. Right. Maybe it might be another time, right? And I think a big part of that is belief. I think you can believe more if you got LeBron James on your team, you know. Yeah. Maybe you don't believe that if your team is not performing well. Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that, if you know. But so I think there's an element of believing and an element of vibrating at that energetic reality, you know, and you will attract, you know, things to you. So maybe, you know, I think it's hard to fixate on, like, you know, a specific matter outcome. I think the more valuable thing is to be connected to that type of person. You know, how does a champion show up? How does a champion move through the day? How does a champion prepare, et cetera, right? Because those things will inevitably, you know, allow you to attract things that maybe were beyond what you were thinking. Maybe you were thinking championship, and I don't know, maybe you are the MVP, you know, and people want to come play with you, and now you're on the Olympic team. You know, maybe there are things beyond what you were even thinking were possible because you were moving like, oh, I'm that guy, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And the process of acting like a champion really is the win in and of itself.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's in your control.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what I think a lot of people, a disconnect a lot of people have about manifestations, because they think that the thing they're manifesting is separate from them, but it's not. It's you. It's you being that, you know, because you can, you know, I love what Gary Vee says. Like, someone was like, when did you think you were successful? He was like, I decided I was successful before I started.
Yeah.
I was already successful, you know, and a lot of times we feel like we need something out, because that's what we're taught, right? We're taught, okay, you need that thing outside of yourself for proof that you can feel that way.
To feel whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or even to feel whatever you want to feel, right? To feel like you're successful, to feel like you're accomplished, but
To feel love,
right? But those are all energies,
right?
Know? We don't really want the thing. We want the way the thing makes us feel.
Yes. Say that again.
We don't really want the thing. We want the way the thing makes us feel.
Yeah.
You know, so if we can practice giving ourselves love, if we can practice feeling more free or feeling more abundant through, like, living on purpose, you know, practicing our values, you know, having boundaries, being loving to ourselves, showing up in ways we want to show up, you know, then you will feel it, and inevitably, you know, your reality will mirror that feeling that you have, you know, and it might not look like what you want it to look like, you know. We aren't in control in that way, but we are still powerful and connected to the whole thing.
So, you know, let's take us to somebody who is in a rut or isn't feeling love or isn't feeling connected to the whole thing. What's the blueprint for them to get right back on the right path?
Well, I think a couple of things, right? I think one is to be aware that life is painful. And I feel like a lot of the suffering involved in life is needed for our heart to crack open. is needed for us to have compassion, is needed for us to heal in the ways we need to heal and get closer to what feels purposeful to us. And so I think a lot of times we look at these quote unquote negative emotions or experiences as if they are like holding us back. But oftentimes it's clearing out the way, you know, it's teaching us things. And we learn so much from, you know, I don't like the word failure. I don't think failure exists, but we learn so much from failure or losses or pain, you know, that is important for us. And if we overlook those things, granted, they may not feel, you know, pleasant in the moment, but, you know, if we overlook them, then we don't really live the life that we want to live. So I think it's important to be aware of that. And then I think the most important thing for transformation is just radical self-compassion, you know, just giving yourself love, treating yourself, you know, we're all just like, I didn't know I didn't finish that sentence. My girlfriend always makes me aware when I don't finish sentences, but treating yourself, you know, that's what I was going to say. We're all just little kids that want to belong and want to be loved, you know? And so if we can remember that, you know, maybe you didn't get that in your environment at home, or maybe you didn't get it to the level you wanted to, but as you mature and become an adult, you're then able to reparent yourself, right? Mm. So remembering like, okay, how can I give that little kid love? How can I make them feel heard and seen and valid? You know, and being aware that it's a practice, you know, it's an ongoing practice, right? And then, you know, I think it's really helpful to couple that with some sort of awareness practice, right? Because we're mostly on autopilot. So unless you can create some distance between the thoughts, create some awareness around the emotions, it's hard to really work with them, right? So meditation's super powerful for that. You know, journaling is really helpful as well. And so I would start there. And then I think something we really overlook in our society is that we are hardwired for connection. You know, we need to, as much as, you know, I like to be like, you know, validate yourself, like we also need to belong. That's just a fact, you know? And so having friends, you know, peers, a therapist, a coach, you know, anyone who you feel like can mirror love to you and support to you, like that's really, really helpful, you know? And then, you know, it's just awareness that it's a practice and that you're not always going to feel great. I'll add in that remembering that like this is all energy, you know? So oftentimes we want to feel great, but we're not doing things that give us energy, you know? So like if, you know, we were talking earlier, like if you aren't sleeping well, right, or if you aren't prioritizing sleep, then you're not going to have the same energy to feel good, and your mind's inevitably not going to think the way you want to think. If you aren't exercising, you know, energetically you're not going to feel the same, you know? If you are around people that are draining you, energetically you're not going to feel the same, you know? If you don't get any time in the sun or in nature, energetically you're not going to feel the same. So remembering that we are these animals that just like houseplants, you know, we need conditions that are helpful for us. And so I think those are all things to be aware of too, because I think sometimes we think we can just will our way to feeling good. It's like, no, like you need some sunshine, you know?
Yeah. How do you know when it's the conditions, and how do you know when it's yourself?
Yeah, I think it's all of it, you know? I think the most important thing is to try to create some sort of structure, some sort of practices, habits that just allow you to experiment and see what works for you. See when you feel, you know, the most energized. Do you need 8 hours? Do you need 9 hours of sleep? Do you need 7.5? You know, it's like a whole big experiment. And just, you know, there's a lot of science around like, okay, you need at least 10 minutes of sunshine every day. You know, there's, you know, different things like that. So if you can just make it a practice to be like, okay, scientists are suggesting this amount of exercise is optimal, and then test for yourself. Like I know personally, like, if I go more than 2 days without working out, I feel way more irritable, way more doubtful, way more anxious. If I work out consistently, I feel like I can do anything. So it's like, all right, so like, you gotta work out, you know? Like, and so a lot of it's just experimenting and figuring out what works, and then just looking at the science and creating systems, but not overwhelming yourself, right? I think a lot of times we feel like we need to go from 0 to 100, you know, but it's like, do what, make it easy. That's one thing I like to think about, you know, is like, I feel like our culture makes us feel like the harder it is, the better it is. Or we might feel that we aren't good enough, or the experience isn't good enough unless it's hard. But it's like, you can also make it easy.
Where does that come from?
Well, I think if you were in a household where there was a lot of chaos and stress, you might feel that like everything needs to be a struggle, and that, or maybe that you aren't worthy of peace, or you aren't worthy of grace, or you aren't worthy of ease in your life. So I think that's one. I think it's also a culture that for so long didn't prioritize well-being. You know, so like hearing things like sleep when you're dead, or like, you know, sleep is for lazy people, or things like that, you know. And then also, you know, just capitalism, you know, when you equate time with money, you feel like anytime you aren't moving, you know, you aren't valuable, you know, and you can feel guilty. But the reality is that, like, you know, if you look at the science, after about 10 hours, 9 hours of work, it's diminishing in return. So everything you do is just worse. You're just wasting your time. You know, after about 50 hours of work in a week, everything you do is just diminishing returns. You know, you actually aren't being productive. You just are doing it so you feel better about yourself, you know? And so when you start looking at the science, you start saying like, oh, if you get less than this amount of sleep, like, you're working at half speed, you know? So I used to be like, oh, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to get one less hour of sleep so I can like wake up and do these other things. And then inevitably, I'm scrolling. I'm not thinking as much as creatively. You know, I'm worse off. And now, you know, that I prioritize rest, I prioritize breaks, I prioritize sleep, I'm happier. I get way more done, you know, and I feel better. And I've been able to sort of, I think a big thing too is like, there was a point where I was like, I am taking breaks so that I can be productive. And I had to, it was in the last year, I've gotten to a point where it's like, no, I am worthy of breaks for the sake of breaks. I'm worthy of pleasure for the sake of pleasure, because I'm alive and I'm human, and yeah.
This is the show.
I don't need to earn sleep, you know what I mean? I don't need to earn a meal, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah, so.
So, like, what are your rewards today? Do you have rewards? Is your rewards just, like, being alive? Like, you mentioned how your award at one point was a meal.
Yeah.
But like, what would be the example today?
Yeah. So I don't even think about it that way. I just prioritize it. So it used to be like I wouldn't really give myself breaks unless my body was like, all right, you just can't do this today. And I'd be like, damn, all right, well, I got to chill, you know? But I would just feel guilty. I wouldn't really reward myself. I would see it as an add-on, like, oh, like, you can't really be going for a walk right now. You got to be grinding, you know, or like, you know, it's Saturday, so what? Like, go grind, you know?
Yeah. So what would you recommend for somebody who's still in that thought process of?
Well, yeah, well, one, just knowing that, like, if your purpose is actually to be productive, then you should prioritize breaks, because they will actually make you more productive. So just realizing that the way you're going at it isn't actually going to give you the solution that you want. You know, it's really just going to burn you out and make you feel like depressed and upset and over it. So that is one thing that helped me, at least. And then another thing is being mindful that, like, it's a marathon, you know. It's a long game. This is a lifestyle, you know. It's not about doing it in a week for our ego's sake, you know. And so I think that helps to, you know, take some of the pressure off. And then trying to enjoy it, you know. At the end of the day, you want to enjoy it. Because I think, you know, a big thing that, like, school teaches us is that, like, there's a next level to get to that's better than the level we're at. You know, so it's like high school, college, job, promotion, blah, 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 blah. So you're always looking at the next thing that's supposedly better. But it's like, no, this is the only thing we have right now. So like, and that's one thing that came to me when Pop Smoke died. You know Pop Smoke? Mm-hmm. So when he passed away, it was shortly after Kobe passed away. And I was just like, you know, when you look at museums or when you look at life in general or relationships, we look at its quality based on how long it lasts or how old it is. Mm. But, you know, I started looking at things as, you know, more of a less longitudinal and more like in the moment. Like, how intense is that moment? You know, how much impact, how influential is that moment? Because if you look at Kobe, you know, he had intense as fuck moments. Granted, like, you know, I wish Kobe was here now, you know, but that doesn't take away from those moments, you know. I wish Pop Smoke was here right now, but that doesn't take away from those moments. And so I started to realize, like, it's all about prioritizing the moment, and because that's all we have. And, like, I don't want to wait until I'm 50 to enjoy my life, you know. I don't want to wait until I'm 50 to go on vacation or, you know, go see these parts of the world or, like, do this thing I'm scared to do or build this business or whatever it is, you know. So it's like doing those things and then also realizing that, like, everything is better when I take care of myself. So whatever I need to do, like, making that a priority. You know, granted, I want to build things. Granted, I want to do things. But I also need to take care of myself because it'll make the whole experience better.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful perspective and outlook. Mm-hmm. I'm curious why you think Kobe and Pop Smoke had such big impacts on you when I assume you've never met either of them.
Yeah. Oof. That was another thing that I realized. I was like, I started learning about grief and I was like, yeah, we can grieve. I mean, that's a whole nother, that's a tangent, but
we can go down that route if you want.
Yeah. Well, I'll just, you know, I cried immediately. He died on my birthday actually.
Wow.
So it was Kobe. So it was a big thing. Cause it was like, you know, I'm growing another year older as one of my heroes is dying, you know, and just because he was a superhero to me, you know, and so I just took so much away from the way he showed up and how much he gave. And I also recognized that, like, it's such a reminder that it's not forever, you know. And the day Pop Smoke died, I actually did shrooms that same morning. Wow. So I was tripping that all day. And so, yeah, that thought came to me where I was just like, whoa, like, you know, it's not about how long it lasts. It's about this moment, you know, because we never know when it's our time, you know. So just maximizing the moment. Those are the thoughts that came to me.
Yeah. When Kobe died, what came to me was, oh, my God, one, like, what a tremendous impact on my life. And this is incredible. Like, it's crazy that I feel a level of connection to him, and that is incredible.
Yeah.
And the other thing I thought about, which was an interesting thought, which was like, I wonder how much time Kobe spent thinking about his own death, thinking about growing old, thinking about all these things that didn't actually matter.
Yeah.
And and learning about Kobe and watching him from afar, I don't assume that he spent a lot of time on things that didn't matter.
Yeah.
But it made me think, like, wow, I do spend a lot of time thinking, like, oh, I wonder if I'll die like this. I wonder how this will end. I wonder about that. And it's like, but this could all be gone right now.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
What a waste.
We gotta find wood, though.
Yeah. So, like, what a waste of thought and what a waste of energy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was just powerful for me because I was like, I really should be more present and be more able to just be.
Yeah, you know,
that's what it really taught me.
100%.
And what stuck with me.
100%. And I think there's also the other side of the coin with that, where it's like, I think awareness of death also makes it so it's like, yeah, like, feel more free, do it. But then it's also like, do it to the max,
right?
You know, because,
like,
you
we're gonna
know.
Die, so, like, let's make this as you know? As epic as possible. You
know? I think there's that, and then there's also even another part where it's like, take care of yourself because you really, you know, could, you know, get sick or yeah. I mean, that's what almost drowning taught me, you know. I like,
what was that like?
Yeah, I was in meditation, saved my life. So if anyone thinking about meditating, just yeah,
that'll be the title of this episode. Meditation saved my life.
Legit. Yeah, but I totally resonate with what you shared, bro. But yeah, on drowning, I was upstate with some friends. You know, we were at a lake. First day we were at the lake, it was chilling. We went camping. Second day, you know, they're swimming across the lake. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I could do that too. Mind you, I'd never formally learned how to swim. I was comfortable in water, way too confident. But like just being in the Caribbean, my dad throwing me in the water, you know, I knew how to like float a little doggy paddle and I could make it down a lap of a pool. But anyways, I'm like, if I get tired, I'll just float. But my breathing was awful. You know, I was holding my breath at times. And so I would get exhausted very quickly. So I get about halfway across the lake and I'm like, fuck, this was a really, really bad idea. And at this point, it's like, all right, don't turn back. Like, keep going and get closer to them and ask for help. And I was on the verge of panicking. And yeah, just with meditation, I was just able to calm myself. And it was just like, all right, calm down. You're okay. I just allowed myself to breathe. I was like, relax. You're going to be fine. And then I swam closer. I got like 3/4 of the way. And I was just like, okay, I don't have any more in me. And so I called out to them. And I was like, yo, guys, I need help. But they saw me up. So they were like, okay, like we're going to come over. And I went on my back to float because my arms were so tired. And at that moment, the panic just came in and I just went under. And then I like flailed to resurface. And then, you know, fortunately, it was enough for them where they were able to help me get to the other side. But yeah, after that moment, I mean, the two things that came to mind were like, life is fragile, like take care of myself, but also life is fragile, so do what the fuck I want. Yeah.
Did you live differently after that moment?
Yeah. I went down a rabbit hole of YouTube videos on swimming and drowning videos. And I was like, okay, we're going to learn to swim. And then I was like, we're going to do a triathlon. So like, that's one thing that's helped me. But it, in terms of like conceptually, I think about death a lot more, you know, and anytime I'm like fearful of doing something or worried about judgment, I'm just like, you're going to die. Like,
and
do
the
it.
People you're worried about judging are also going to die.
Gonna die. Yeah. You know, none of this shit really matters.
That's scary and freeing at the same time.
Yeah. But I also take better care of myself now. That's part of the reason also why I'm better at like prioritizing rest and shit like that. Because like I've seen like, you know, this dude that was a mentor of mine, you know, he was an entrepreneur working crazy hours and he had a heart attack,
God.
From the stress, you know. I know another homie of mine who had like some other stress and, you know, induced things. And he was in the hospital for a few days, you know, and he's a couple years older than me, you know, and I've learned about how like stress leads to like cancer and all this stuff. And so I'm just like, all right, you can build things and do things, but like take care of yourself in the process. You know, you don't want to like, I swear that was a big thing I realized when I was burning myself out. I was like, yo, I'm literally killing myself to build a wellness business.
Yo, what a paradox.
You know?
And so, what, you just stopped? Like, how'd that end?
No. I still work a lot. And I love it. You know, I'm just better at listening to my body.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm much better at being like, okay, I feel really, really exhausted today. I'm going to take the day off, you know? Or being like, okay, let me try to have a 7 o'clock cutoff time with work, you know, or just things like that, you know, and just thinking about it long term. Because if it was up to me, I would do 12-hour days until I couldn't do it. And inevitably, I'd hit a wall every time, you know. So after 3 burnouts, I was like, okay, I think I learned my lesson.
What are the signs of the burnout?
Yeah, in my case, and what a lot of the research shows is you know, you can have... Well, one of the biggest things is just like you feel less creative, you feel less energized, and you feel less willing to do the things that used to be easy for you, you know? And there's like a looming sense of just like exhaustion, you know? And that's the body being like, okay, please slow down, take care of me, you know? But you, it gives you time, you know? And so if you ignore it, then you can start to get physical symptoms, you know? You might start to get headaches, you might start to get irritated stomach. And then eventually it often leads to like depression and anxiety. And if you keep pushing it, then eventually you hit a wall where your shit just shuts down, you know, and then like you can't really send a text message because that's it's just you're just so stressed and overwhelmed, you know. You gotta like cancel events, you know. I had a moment where like I burned out so bad where like I had to like cancel like a big I didn't actually cancel the event, actually I showed up but I canceled everything else that was important, you know. I had like a meeting with Lululemon. I was like, I can't do this right now, you know. I had like text, you know, and I was just like, I can't. I had a newsletter that I sent every week for like a year and a half, and I was like, I can't even send this right now. That was the I was trying to send a newsletter that was already almost done, and I was just like, I can't. I was like about to freak out, you know, and I just stopped. I was like,
you know, how much of that is like us trying to sabotage our own success?
That's real. And I think there's elements of it, right? So there's like
and even getting to the burnout in the first place, like oh, like I don't want myself to be successful, so I'm just gonna work as hard as I can. So you know what I mean? Like
I'd say in my case, I definitely had sabotaging tendencies, but they were different than burning out. It was more around like stopping momentum in ways when I felt like things were going too well. But this in particular, I realized had more to do with just like me having, you know, excess mental stress and then not decompressing or practicing ways to de-stress. That's why I love, I know you have the Oura Ring. I love the I don't have the Whoop. I don't have the brand. I don't have it, but I love the concept because it's like, you know, the strain and recovery, you know, and we don't prioritize recovery, you know, and to your point, that could be a sabotaging mechanism because a lot of times when we don't feel like we can give ourselves rest, it's because we don't feel like we're good enough or we're worthy of it, you know, or we feel like
we're in that lack mindset of like, oh, if I rest for 1 second, some other person's going to take my spot.
100%, you know. And so I don't know. I don't personally sabotage in that way. But I do know that oftentimes that, to your point, isn't coming from a healthy place.
Right.
You know. And so it's still not super helpful. You know, it can get you to a certain point, but to really level up to, in the ways you want to do it. And I was also just looking at like a lot of people that I admired, and like certainly they work really hard, but I was looking at like Jack Dorsey, and he was like, I meditate for, you know, 30 minutes every day. I sleep at least 7.5 hours, and he's running two companies. And I'm like, okay, I'm looking at Oprah. Granted, they have teams, you know, but Oprah's like, I meditate for 20 minutes twice a day and I sleep 8 hours guaranteed. You know, I was looking at Elon and the Microsoft dude, why am I blanking on his name?
Bill Gates,
right? Yeah. And I remember both of them anecdotally sharing, like, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. And then I realized if I get less than 6 hours of sleep, I'm not effective, you know? I looked at Jeff Bezos and he was like, oh yeah, I stop my day at 5 and I need like puttering time in the morning where I just like read the newspaper. He's like, why would I stop it at 5? Because after that, I don't make great decisions and I'm here to make decisions, you know? And so looking at all these, or even, you know, what's his name? Richard Branson. Yeah. Like, you know, looking at him just like fly around the world and like do what he wants. You're looking at all these celebrities like show up to basketball games and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, these people, they're clearly working hard, you know, and some of them may be harder than others, but they've also figured out like, oh, I got to enjoy this to some extent, you know? If I want to go to this basketball game, I'm going to go to the basketball game. And obviously they're at different stages and things like that. But what the lesson I really took away is like, if Jack Dorsey can meditate for 30 minutes, sleep at least 7.5 hours and run two of the world's biggest companies, then I can at least sleep, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's a really important point about the different places, right? So often we are looking at what the world's most successful people are doing and saying, I should do that too. But that's them on year 20 or year 30. 100%. It's like if you just started lifting weights, you wouldn't go to somebody on year 20 or 30 and just copy what they're doing. It'd be different. 100%. So it's very interesting because I think there's so much we can gain. But I also think we should be equally aware of 100%. What they were doing when they were just starting. Because was Jack Dorsey meditating for 4 hours when he was when he was building Twitter? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
He wasn't. But
but we got to look at that, right? We got to compare that data.
That's true. I think. No. I agree with you 100%. I agree. And I will say, like, you know, I think what he did realize is he wasn't as good at making decisions.
Yeah.
And he didn't show up the way he wanted to when he didn't take care of himself. Mm. Like, that's something that I've shortened. Like, he even had, like, a rule around beer. He was like, I don't necessarily have a to-do list. I have a, like, not-to-do list.
Yeah.
And one of them is, like, don't drink beer during weeknights, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because he was drinking, you know, he wasn't really taking care of himself. And he realized, like, I'm not as effective as a leader in the, with my thinking, you know? And so he feels like all the things he does now are helpful for the ways that he shows up and the, his work and his clarity, his creativity. So I think there's a lot of that. But totally to your point, you know, it's also like, you know, a lot of these people are in positions where they've learned so much. They have teams. They have money.
They've made it.
They've, you know, exactly. You know, so I think there's certainly differences in that sense. I think the overall thing that I've taken away, though, is like everything is better when I take care of myself.
Yep.
And so for so long, I felt like I had to run myself down to be effective, but I was actually less effective, you know.
And so is that your aspiration to be similar to Oprah, to be similar to Jack Dorsey, to be Bill Gates? Like, what, where does this go for you, and how do you, your own story in your head at this current moment fit into where you would like to go?
Yeah. So the big thing that I took away is, I mean, I think one is just like prioritizing, you know, my practices that help my clarity of thinking, that help my energy, that help me to show up with courage and you know, in all the and work through fears, all that. So whatever I have to do to make sure I'm you know, in that state is one thing to keep in mind. And honestly, a big connection that I made, it came back to like what I was sharing around like realizing how infinite the moment was, like through sex and being able to connect with the divine through that. A big thing I realized was like, oh, I don't actually need to become somebody. Like, I can just be it right now, you know? And I think a lot about Tupac, you know, because I'm 30 years old now, and Tupac died when he was 26. And for so long, I would look at these people that I admired, and I'd be like, oh, I need to wait to get to a point where I can be that person or where I can show up in that way. And then I realized, like, Tupac was 26, and he just decided he was Tupac.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't wait for anyone to say he's Tupac. He said, I'm Tupac, you know, and this is my music. You know what I mean? And so that was a big lesson for me. It's like, I just need to be it. Who do I want to be? Do I want to be a thought leader? You know, do I want to build a community? You know, do I want to, you know, spread awareness? Okay, be that. You know, how does that person show up right now? And don't wait for the numbers or the headlines or the outside validation. Be it right now. And all that is inevitably going to come. So that's my big priority, is just being whoever I want to be in this moment and not feeling like I need to wait, you know, until New York Times writes a story about me to feel like I can be that person, you know?
Yeah. Well, this conversation shows to me, at least, you're being the person, and it's it's cool to witness it in person.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Where can people connect with you further and get involved with you, your movement, and what you're doing?
Yeah, so our website is withthepeoples.com, and we have a newsletter at the bottom that I send every week. It's around growing as a creator and building your self-awareness. So that's something that you can access. Also, at Kyle Somersall, KyleSomersall, on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram. I'm most active on, I'm active on pretty much on all of them. I'm most active on Instagram and TikTok, but I'm on Twitter as well. And we're going to ramp that up in the new year even more. So all the platforms.
Let's go. And I love whenever you post, man, and I get to see your stuff and your thoughts. It's just a little hit of positivity, a little mindfulness, and a way to connect deeper with my soul. So
I appreciate
highly
that.
Recommend the follow, and thank you for coming on here today and spreading your truth, spreading your message, because it's such a powerful one. And I'm really grateful for you, man. Thank
no
you.
Doubt, brother. Thanks for having me, Danny. Grateful to be here as well.
Thank you for listening to that episode of the podcast. I'm so grateful for your time and your attention. And if you have any thoughts about this episode, let me know on Twitter at @HeyDannyMiranda. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day or night, and I will see you in the next episode. Peace.